stations. Other contributors include American Funds from Capital Group, taking a consistent long-term perspective to help investors achieve their goals. Securities offered through American Funds Distributors, Incorporated, and the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks.
If you were listening to our last food show on Happy Hours, you probably heard this exchange between me and Feast magazine editor Jenny Vergara.
Now, Jenny, you have a recommendation that takes us north of the river.
Yes, I do. Northlandia is what they're calling that now. Did you know that? I think that's really interesting.
Northlandia, a sly reference to the hipstery vibe of Portland that's both mocked and celebrated in the show Portlandia.
Do you remember the 90s?
Yeah.
You know, people were talking about getting piercings and getting tribal tattoos.
Yeah.
And people were singing about saving the planet and forming bands.
Yeah.
There's a place where that idea still exists as a reality, and I've been there.
Where is it?
Portland.
Oregon?
Yeah. Dream of the 90s is alive.
Portland, Portland, Portland. Portlandia is all coffee shops, craft breweries, giant beards and tattoos. So the term Northlandia got our attention here on KCUR's Central Standard. We've been wondering whether there's a Northland neighborhood around Highway 9 and Armour that's really, truly up and coming in that Portland kind of way. Call 816-235-2888 if you spend time in that area and have an observation to share. 816-235-2888. Let's turn to a neighborhood resident and business owner, Adam Roberts of Screenland Armour. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
So your movie theater is actually what first took me to the neighborhood we're talking about. Do you hear that a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been there for almost 10 years now. So it's a lot different than it used to be. When we took over operation
5 years ago, it was kind of a barren industrial wasteland of sorts. And so, yeah, a lot of people were only coming to see us. And now, of course, that's changed drastically. So,
where exactly is "quote unquote" Northlandia?
So, I guess if you're going north on 29 and you get off and go left, that's what I would say we consider Northlandia. You pass, you know, your typical Wendy's and Taco Bell, and then as soon as you pass the Quick Trip, you're in like this little area. It starts with our little tiny city hall and police station, and then you see the theater, and then you start getting further into it, and then the breweries and all the many hair salons, and they're all there for you to kind of peek around every corner. And there's just like a little bar here, a little, you know, thing here and there and there and there, and it kind of just goes on and on and on, and it almost feels like it's just kind of strange, like almost like everything's a little alley, only the alleys are huge streets, really wide open streets with beautiful trees.
Yeah, scale is something that has struck me about the neighborhood. The aesthetic of the architecture feels distinctive and kind of like an industrial WPA mid-century kind of way.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of explaining it. I mean, the Armour Strip is more where the quote-unquote downtown area was built up. And, of course, that kind of fell in the late 80s or in the 90s. And it became all industrial. And if you go on Swift, that's all you see. What's cool is the industrial buildings are switching into businesses that aren't just import-export and huge trucks. You have coffee shops and bars and bike shops and all sorts of cool stuff happening on Swift.
What do you think is the appeal of the area that we're talking about?
Well, for us, years ago when there was nothing else up there, people would say, "Where's North Kansas City? How far away is that from where I'm at in downtown?" I'm like, "Well, you can almost walk here. It's so close." So the appeal to us was always, "You're right off a bunch of highways. It's 15, maybe 20 minutes from almost anywhere in town. It's really convenient to get in and out. There's a lot of free parking, and it's really safe and clean." So that was always our even 5 years ago, it was always the same. It was always in and out, easy, safe, clean, and free parking.
You know, the area that you're talking about, I think one of the distinctive and to people who don't spend a lot of time in the Northland, perhaps surprising things, is that it does not have a suburban feel at all.
That's totally right. I mean, it feels, if you go 5 minutes north, that's more suburban, more what people are expecting, the cookie cutter houses. But this is more something like you'd see in Hyde Park, I guess, with the million different types of houses, and from big and small. And you have a 5-bedroom house next to a 1-bedroom apartment. And it is very eclectic, the mix of housing, I think, in the area. It's small, but it's very eclectic.
Tell me about yourself and your background, where you grew up, how you got into movies and became someone whose job is to show them to people.
Well, I fell in love with movies like most kids do at a young age, and I just became obsessed and wanted to make movies. So that was kind of my first route as like a 15-year-old boy trying to make movies, and that continued to this day, really. But it became, how do I make movies in Kansas City and make money doing it? And it's hard unless you want to, you know, make commercials and do weddings, and that wasn't my thing. So the opportunity to work in the corporate atmosphere kind of presented itself, and I did that for a number of years and was bored. And then this Greenland Armor kind of fell into our lap, and we decided to go for it. And that was 2012, and we kind of decided to take the theater that we loved and make it our own and make it the theater we wanted as a, you know, an 18-year-old kid who loved movies. So showing something totally different, doing different events like this weekend, we have our Arts and Crafts Film and Beer Fest, which is a bunch of movies that never will probably play here, or if they do, it'll be a few-day run. And it was just kind of our love for movies and being able to curate something that's totally different from anything else in the area. And it was successful, and we were able to continue to grow that. And that's kind of where we are today, is the cool, highest-rated theater in town that a lot of people still don't know about, which is cool.
So tell me, though, like, who would you say is the demographic for your business?
So initially, the number of years, it's been south of the river. It's been people from Waldo and Brookside that have been driving up to our little theater, partly because we are the only place showing these cool movies, or, you know, now it's commonplace to show revival films. But 5 years ago, it wasn't the case, and it was really just us showing things like Vertigo and stuff. So we had a number of people driving 20 or 30 minutes just to see films at our place. Now it is broadened out because people, the word's gotten out. So we still find it difficult to get people in the Northland to come down to see us. But it is a broader range of
clientele. So you're like that band that used to be off the radar, but now everyone knows about them.
Or like, we're like almost like the next album is the break, you know?
You moved personally to this neighborhood at around the same time, right?
So I was living in an apartment there when we took over the theater. And then I searched and searched and searched when I was ready to buy a house. And it was so hard to buy a house. So I just bought one just 5 minutes outside in Gladstone. And then this year, a friend of mine had his house coming up for sale. And I wasn't going to let the opportunity pass. So we were looking for a house, and we found his offer, and it's a tough market that goes really, really quick and is really competitive. So we're fortunate enough to get a house on 24th Avenue, which is like right in the middle of everything.
How do house prices in the area where you live compare to like a similar neighborhood south of the river?
I think we're lower tier still because we're still up and coming, but they're far more expensive than what they were a year ago. I mean, it's been kind of mind-boggling how quickly the price has gone up. I mean, the school district's great, and that's one of the big advantages, and how clean and safe everything is. And now you have all these things popping up, so people, younger people, really want to live there. That wasn't really the case a couple of years ago. Now that they're the ones who are trying to buy up everything, and they're very competitive, and you know, Cerner is right in our backyard. So we get a lot of younger people really being competitive, trying to get their first house in North Kansas City when the prices are still relatively reasonable.
What about the business district we're talking about? How has that area changed in the 5 years you've been there, both as a resident and a business owner?
Well, I can walk down to a coffee shop, and not just one coffee shop. There's a handful of coffee shops now. That was not a thing even 20 months ago. So it's kind of just the fact that you can do that is, and they're locally owned, is totally different. We have a music venue now. That's everything's totally different. And, you know, we just opened our second Tapcade location right on Swift.
Tapcade, explain what that is.
So we were the first arcade bar in Kansas City. And we have our first location was in the Crossroads. Another, we're the East Crossroads. So it was kind of the same type of thing as North Kansas City. It was little, it was just us and Grinders really there a few years ago. Now it's packed and everyone's trying to get in and get the last spaces, and it's very competitive. North Kansas City is exactly the same situation. It was 5 years ago. There was a lot of empty spaces, and now everyone's vying to get into every building possible, put something cool in. And being Northland guys and living in North Kansas City and having our other business there, it made perfect sense to put in our tap gate there. So, but yeah, it's been awesome to watch all these businesses, and
a tapcade. I mean, I'm guessing that people who are going out at night to have some beers and play video games outside the confines of their own homes, that's also within sort of like a very specific kind of age. And I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
You know, it's such a since Chicken and Pickle opened,
that's a restaurant.
Restaurant and like outdoor concept. There's been so much travel from, you know, Olathe and like, you know, places most people wouldn't generally travel to Northtown for 30, 40 minutes away. So we get a lot of our clientele is totally different up north than it is at our downtown location. We do have local residents that come in, but it's that. I mean, they're on the same block as us. And then, of course, Center Block and Restless Spirits. And now we have a record store there. And so there's all these small mom-and-pop shops. And then there's this huge complex that's bringing all these people and out-of-towners. Like, people from Wichita just come up to play Chicken and Pickle, which blows our minds. But, that, you know, it helps all the local businesses around us. So that's been the biggest change, I guess, in the last 12, 15 months since they opened, is the amount of out-of-towners and distance that people will travel just to go to that place, and then naturally they what's around, and then they walk down or check us out too.
Is this part of a concerted effort, or is it happening organically? What's your sense?
I think it's pretty organic. Like most of the business owners I've met over the years, they just kind of North Kansas City seems like a very convenient location. I remember when Cinder Block opened, we met the owner Bryce.
And he came down. That's a brewery.
Yeah. And so they were the second brewery to open. Big Rip was the first, but just by a few months. And
I remember, say Northland water is good for making beer.
That's what they say. And apparently spirits now. Restless Spirits says the same thing. We do have very delicious water. You should come up to Northtown, drink some water. It's very good.
Sorry, as you were saying.
But when we met him in 2013, he was still building his brewery. And the reason was, it was just a convenient location. It was close to his house. The rent was reasonable. And
you need a big space, don't you?
Yeah, and there's a lot of warehouse spaces up there. So it just kind of made sense. Cheap rent, reasonable price, and very convenient location. And I think that's kind of what it comes down to initially. Now, I do think probably people who would have just never looked into Northtown are starting to look that direction because it's cool, it's trendy, and and yeah, we have that huge development that's building on the other side of 29.
What is that?
They've announced like crazy things like a restaurant and surfing concept that I don't know. I can't wrap my hand around really, but that's something that they're doing over there. There's like
I've always wondered why we don't have more surfing in Kansas City.
It's like I look around and I'm like, where are all the waves for me to hit? And then there's like a Top Golf type concept. So this like big things that aren't necessarily what people think of in North Kansas City or coming on the other side of 29. So.
Let's talk to one of our callers. Paige has called us from North Kansas City at 816-235-2888. Hi, Paige.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. What do you want to share?
North Kansas City. I'm really excited. So I started working at the North Kansas City Community Center, or Kansas City North. It's up on 3930 Northeast Antioch. And I've worked for a couple years now, and I've definitely seen the demographics of my clientele changing. I teach the art classes over there, and it's definitely becoming more and more hip. And I see the pickleball is huge. Everybody loves the pickleball. So we've got, like, a huge clientele changing. So they have a big influx of about 75,000 jobs. So that's what one of the big community meetings I had with my boss working for KC Parks and stuff. We were talking about that. So the increases of amenities and infrastructure has been awesome, and especially the creativity and the mom and pop aspect of that. So I'm really excited about that, and I'm really excited
Paige,
to be teaching the art classes.
I have a quick question for you. I mean, when you say that things are becoming more hip, can you tell me what you see that tells you things are more hip now? Like, describe it a little bit.
So, being more hip, so I'm an artist. I teach art classes. I make art. I sell art. And there wasn't an art class at the community center that I had, but there wasn't as many outlets and stuff for that. So as I've been teaching over the couple of years, kind of getting the word out, I've seen the clientele. I've seen these like creative people come out of the woodwork, and they're doing more active things in the North Kansas City area, not just the Crossroads. So Crossroads is awesome, but there's more and more stuff happening, like the Craft and Film Festival this weekend. There's just more of a creative energy, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have the hipsters with the, you know, like tribal tattoos on their forearm of like forks and stuff going to be coming in there.
I hope that's the hipster thing now.
Coffee.
Forks specifically.
Yeah. No, the cutlery is the new tribal. and I feel like that's a good way to represent Kansas City, or at least North Kansas City, because everybody's really into craft things. So whether it's craft food, artisan cocktails, like somebody's really into something and they're passionate about it.
So being super into stuff.
Kind of showing.
I like that definition. Adam, I know you have to go soon. Before we do say goodbye to you, I wonder if there's anything that worries you about the change that you've described and that Paige has just described, or if you're totally on board, like 100%.
I mean, as of right now, I think it's all still very exciting. You know, it's kind of an old hat for us because we've been there forever. It's like, yeah, Northtown's always been cool.
Forever as in 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, for like, it's always been cool to us. So now that everyone else is finding out about it and coming, I think it's exciting. I hope that means a lot more long-term customers for everybody. And yeah, I hope we all continue to grow and expand and help each other out.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
If you have noticed changes in Northlandia, Old Northtown, the area near Highway 9 and Armour, call 816-235-2888. Is Northlandia the next Midtown? And if so, is that a good thing? 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about changes in Northlandia. Northtown, the area near Highway 9 and Armour, and you can call 816-235-2888 with your Northlandia story. I'm here with some new guests. We're talking to another area resident, Elise Carlson. Hi, Elise.
Hi, good morning.
And we're also joined by Jenny Vergara. She's one of our food critics, and she joins us from Feast Magazine.
Good morning.
Hey, so Jenny, you're the one who inspired this whole thing when you talked about a Northlandia destination. And I'm curious, from a food and drink perspective, as a person who visits lots of different areas in town, what you have seen changing in this area.
Well, so I've been traveling this area for about 10 years because the party rental company that I use for Test Kitchen, my underground supper club, is actually located in this area of town. So I've been traversing the streets there for quite a long time. And as a food writer, I've just noticed literally in the last 5 years, as we were discussing earlier, that, you know, North Kansas City, from a food and drink perspective, has gotten very interesting in terms of breweries and distilleries and new restaurants, and not just casual places, but more upscale places, too. We, you know, Repeal 18th is kind of a new upscale place that has opened recently.
Describe it.
Well, so it used to be an old fireman's bar, and it's been completely redone by a lovely family that had a business, a mattress company, in North Kansas City for years and years and years. So they've already kind of dedicated their whole life's work, basically, to kind of North Kansas City. So it makes sense that they would continue this. The father has retired, and this is kind of his new venture. But it's a fabulous chef that everyone would know. It's a wonderful craft cocktail bartender, and they're doing craft cocktails and kind of upscale small plates. They have an outdoor area for live music. And it's just one of the many places, but it's more than just kind of a burgers and fry part of town. It's really becoming an entertainment destination.
The restaurants with the kind of vibe you're describing, and with a lot of cachet in Kansas City overall, have in the last decade or so been clustered in very specific neighborhoods like the City Market, the West Bottoms, Crossroads, Westport. And of course, there are totally amazing places to eat outside those districts, but that's where the hype has been. Do you think Northlandia is kind of entering that picture, taking its share of that hype?
Yeah, you know, I think all signs point to yes, based on what we've seen. I mean, the thing is that you have to have a population there willing to consume, obviously, all of this new entertainment, great food and great drink. And I think we're seeing that now more and more as more apartments, more condos, houses are getting kind of turned over rather rapidly as Cerner folks are moving in, young couples with no kids trying to buy their first house. I think with that, coupled with the fact that they're minutes from downtown, minutes from Midtown, I mean, it's a very easy destination to get to. So it's well poised to have that happen, I think so. And already has started to happen. I mean, we wouldn't be talking about it, obviously, right? If it wasn't already on the map, so to speak, from a food and drink and entertainment standpoint.
Well, that brings me back to Elise Carlson, who, you know, if we're talking about whether there are residents there who are going to support these sort of, I don't want to use the word hipster because people have such strong feelings about the word, but hipster places.
Absolutely. The theater Screenland was actually my first introduction to the neighborhood, and that was a few years ago. But
do you remember when you first saw the neighborhood, what you felt, what you saw?
Oh, it's a multicultural Mayberry. It's adorable. I am so excited to be a resident there, and I feel like every day I'm discovering new qualities of it that just are more and more charming and rewarding and endearing to me and make me feel more confident about purchasing a home in that part of town. So
where did you live before you lived in Northtown?
I was renting a house in Columbus Park, and it burned down just before Christmas. Just a fluke electrical fire, old knob and tube wiring. So
I'm sorry to hear
that. That's okay. Thank you.
But you had to find a new place to live. I mean, had you ever thought about the Northland before, or was this a new idea for you?
Oddly, I kind of had thought about it. My mom, it's sort of a family hobby to just sort of drive around and look at parts of town and, you know, fantasize about where you would live if you could live somewhere. And so there are parts of town that I have lived in from doing those sorts of exercises, so to speak. And Northland has been that, with my mom especially, like driving around and just kind of exploring. And so when the opportunity presented itself to be seriously considering purchasing a house, the Northland was top of my list. So it was really just a matter of finding a house that was the right fit for me. And as was described, it's become extremely competitive to find anything right now just because of the expansion of both Cerner and the North Casey Hospital. So prices are starting to go up a bit.
They're big employers there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, a new influx of people that are not just new to North Kansas City, but new to Kansas City in general. So the pricing for the houses in that area are still reasonable by Kansas City standards, but are extremely reasonable by a national standard, obviously, for what you're getting. So I think people are really excited to be purchasing a home.
For you, like, what kind of stuff do you like to do? What kind of amenities do you like to have near you as far as how you spend your time off, your spare dollars?
Having the movie theater within walking distance is amazing. Actually, everything there feels like it's just blocks away from you. I ride, it's also extremely flat, and that's an anomaly in Kansas City. I can ride my bike, and it feels like when you're a kid riding your bike, and it's actually fun and not a hassle. So I ride my bike frequently. There's an AMC or AMF bowling alley. That sounds nerdy, but it's a blast. It's huge, and it's so much fun. Actually, the bike shop where I had my bike repaired is part bike shop, part coffee shop, part bar. Velo, shout out to Velo. Hey. there's so many fun things to do up there. Tapcade's great. I haven't been to Chicken and Pickle yet. It's always packed, so I'm going to have to make a point of heading over there. But there's the library is actually really beautiful. I wish they had a little more to offer, but I know that the budget's tight. But it's really beautiful, especially if you have kids. They took the old original library and they've preserved that as strictly the kids section, and it's so charming. And then there's a new addition on it for non-kid literature. So,
would you say? I mean, have you seen Portlandia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When people call this part of town Northlandia, do you kind of get what they're trying to say? And do you think it's accurate?
I do to a certain degree. I'm definitely seeing that sense grow within the community. It's still very much, you know, families and some older residents, but we are seeing those houses turn over and the younger professionals with more modern interests and hobbies sort of and playful activities move in. So you are seeing a lot of, yeah, young, hip, funky. I mean, I'm sitting here with pink hair. So you're seeing more people that sort of outwardly reflect that look and feel. The coffee shops are fantastic. Colony is a coffee shop that I enjoy going to. It's right near the theater. And they opened the music venue nearby that I haven't had a chance to see a show at yet. But yeah.
Let's talk to Pete Doolin. Pete is calling in response to this exact term, the Northlandia term. Hi, Pete.
Hey, Gina.
What do you want to say?
I grew up in the Northland, actually north of Kansas City, but I'm very familiar with North Kansas City over the decades and how it's transformed, and I think it's fantastic with all the new shops and restaurants and bars. But to me, there's no such thing as Northlandia. I mean, there's North Kansas City or Northtown or more broadly the Northland, but just to hear the term Northlandia smacks of hipsterism to me, and it kind of gets under my skin.
Why does that get under your skin?
It seems like it's, I mean, I've never heard of the term until the show, and it seems like a reference to Portlandia.
Right, and I think it is.
Right, and that show, I think both celebrates and mocks hipsterism. And while I think North Kansas City has become more developed and there's a lot more attractions there, and yes, it's, I think, hip, more hip than it used to be as a kind of industrial manufacturing area, I don't know that it needs to be rebranded or renamed with Northlandia. To me, that would be like renaming Westport or Hyde Park, there's no need to create a new moniker for it. And it seems like you're trying too hard to make it something that it already is.
Well, let's talk to Jenny Vergara, who introduced us to this term. Do you know the origins of the term?
Honestly, I saw it on Facebook, and it had to do with the Swift Festival. There's kind of a Swift Road festival that's coming up September 8th and 9th. And it was just an advertisement that somebody had created for it on Facebook. And I thought, Northlandia, I really like that in terms of what Northland, North Kansas City, and that's the other thing.
And it's a very specific part of the Northland that we're talking about. It's what they, I guess, used to call Old Northtown.
Well, and that's kind of the thing about, there's Northland, Northtown, North Kansas City, Old Northtown. I mean, Northland in general has a bunch of different ways that it calls different parts of the Northland, and you have to kind of almost live up north to understand really all of it.
It sounds like maybe you disagree that there was no need for another term.
Oh no, I'm actually in favor of this because I don't think it really speaks to hipsterism or I do think it speaks to the fact that there is a younger audience that's moving there. It's a very proven fact that millennials love games. They love activities. They love to go out and do things together kind of communally. And I think a lot of what's happening in the Northtown is creating places where those things can happen. And I think it's attracting those kinds of folks. I don't really think of it as a negative term, I guess. I think it really speaks to what's new and cool and making this a really unique part of the city that's still convenient to everywhere else in town. So I'm two thumbs up for Northlandia, but
Elise, does it feel self-conscious to you?
A little. I've actually never heard anybody refer to it except for in this program. So I'm sorry, Pete, that you sound really offended. It's not, I think the only exception to that was I attended the inaugural art fair that they had in the park in Macon Park, which, by the way, is an incredible park to go to if you want to do any sport or anything. Go to Macon.
Where is it?
It's just behind. So it's just behind 25th Street, and it runs. It's several blocks. I want to say it runs from Macon to, maybe not as far as Swift, but it's a monstrous park, and they have every type of facility you could need for, you know, basketball, soccer, football, baseball, I think racquetball or handball. There's an amphitheater there. There are pavilions for barbecuing. There's walking trails. There's biking trails. There's playgrounds. There's all sorts of stuff. So Macon Park's amazing. But I attended an art festival there this year, and they had a little cute Parks and Rec made up a cute little map of the booths that were there and the vendors, but also of the businesses in the area and sort of some of the new businesses that haven't opened yet but are in the process. And that it was pretty adorable, and it was made up to say Northlandia, but I don't think it was a Portlandia reference more than it was a funny way of utilizing a map. But yeah, I've never heard anyone call it Northlandia. Everybody I know calls it North KC or NKC or North Kansas City. So,
all right. Well, let's talk to Blake, who is calling us from the Northland. Hi, Blake.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's been your experience?
Well, my wife and I moved up to the Northland just up the street from Northtown in Parkville a couple years ago, and I'm in the process now of moving my office, my law office, from the West Bottoms to North Kansas City, just a few doors down from Screenland Armor. Part of the reason is because of that influx of cultural options and you know, food and drink that's available in Northtown, and really feels like there's been a little bit of a cultural sea change, maybe, in North Kansas City, or if not, then I was just ignorant of it. But it's been a really happy thing to discover for me, and I feel like things. Please go ahead.
The West Bottoms being your previous office location makes me think about come back to the architecture and the kind of industrial landscape in both places. I mean, do you find a comparable kind of vibe? Because part of what people talk about when they do talk about the West Bottoms right now, and lots of neighborhoods south of the river that have previously had some kind of cachet, is just increased attention on them and rising rent, that people are being priced out of a lot of places.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm really fond of a descriptor that was used just a few minutes ago, the multicultural Mayberry.
Seriously, that needs to be a t-shirt. That totally needs to be a t-shirt.
I think is that hits it right on the head in terms of kind of what's happening in the Northland and what was attractive about it for both a place to live and a place to locate my office. Because on the one hand, I can understand the Northlandia term to describe kind of this changing demographic just kind of a different cultural feel that North Kansas City is taking on. But on the other hand, it's still the Northland, and you've got that a little bit, you know, Midwestern sensibility, and some as you get further outside the Northland, some rural ties. But it, just kind of as a one-off, I'm with a group called Northland Progress, and we're having a voting rights festival up in the Northland this weekend. And the reaction from the Northland community as a whole has been overwhelmingly supportive. And I think that's kind of reflective of what's going on in terms of the Northland as a whole.
Well, thanks, Blake. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you.
And now I want to talk to Tony. Tony is calling us from State Line. You standing in the street, Tony? Oh, Tony's gone. Well, any response to what we just heard from Blake? He was kind of referencing politics at the end there. Do you see changing politics?
Well, I haven't been there long enough to know if it's changing so much. I mean, I definitely see Trump stickers on some, you know, vehicles that are up there. And that's sort of expected with being a Midwestern area and being outside of the more centralized part of the city. But I'm a progressive. I'm seeing lots of progressive people move to the neighborhood. But it's regardless of what your politics are, it's undeniably wholesome, and it's not an aggressive part of town. It's safe. It's friendly. It's extremely welcoming. And those are qualities that I think people are really, especially in today's climate, are really looking for as far as a place to settle, is finding those places that are safe, welcoming, and have quality values. Like, there's just everybody's that quintessential neighbor, and it's wonderful.
You know, we're seeing a little Twitter discussion unfolding that gets at maybe some concerns that people hear in the aspirations of any neighborhood, I think, that is changing. But John tweets, "Don't copy other cities, NKC. Be your own place. You're well on your way." And then North Kansas City replies, "We really think we're our own North KC, not the next anything. We've been here for 100 plus years after all."
Well, you know, I think the North Kansas City has really fundamentally made it very easy for new businesses to open up there. I mean, if you think about the red tape that can be involved in dealing with kind of KC Metro, the bigger city entity, well, North Kansas City is its own entity. I mean, if you need to do business there, you're dealing with a small local community and government. And so it can make it very easy to do business there.
Jenny Vergara, Elise Carlson, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You can still tell us your Northlandia story on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. After this break, the story behind Northland opposition to tax-funded streetcar expansion on the August 8th ballot. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's next. We'll also check out a snazzy new organ. Stay tuned. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And an August 8th vote in favor of a petition forcing the city to put future plans for streetcar expansion to a vote was arguably decided by people living north of the river. According to post-election analysis, residents living south of the river opposed the measure by a slim margin, which got us wondering whether there's something the rest of the city doesn't get about Northland's attitudes toward transit. I'm joined by Scott Wagner, Kansas City Councilman for the 1st District at Large. And Scott, your district is just to the north of the Missouri River.
Right. So it goes from the Missouri River to the northern city limits and then east from North Oak Traffic Way to North Woodlands. So kind of that I-35 portion, if you will. Right.
So did you foresee the outcome to that August 8th election?
Well, you know, the interesting part of elections like those is there's no campaign for it. There's no campaign against it. And so you're left with people just simply reading what's on the ballot and then acting accordingly. I think what has been demonstrated is, and not just with this ballot, but historically, is transit is a difficult sell north of the river, partially because we don't have much transit, period. And so there are those who would suggest, well, we need to have more bus service up there in order to see how more transit happens. But the other real issue, I think, is it's very hard for people to understand what does transit connect to. And I think, you know, as we've talked about streetcar development here in Kansas City in general, we've always talked about it in the sense of it's not just moving people, but it's connecting you to destinations. Otherwise, what's the point? And, you know, without, you know, when we've talked about transit in the north, the hardest part is just trying to get north, crossing the river, going through the city of North Kansas City, which incidentally passed back in, I think, 2008, its own tax to actually do streetcar there. So because they saw the value in their community. Gladstone has wanted to connect, you know, up North Oak to the downtown that they've been developing along 70th Street in North Oak. So there is at least some desire to consider it, but it's harder for the general populace to figure out how, you know, if I live at Northeast Flintlock and 152, you know, are you going to bring rail to me? Well, that's pretty difficult because
so like a there's yeah. kind of a
density problem, it sounds like.
Absolutely, because what we've talked about with streetcar is to create density, right? We do not have that in a city of 475,000 people and 319 square miles. So part of the purpose is to create density. That's why in North Kansas City and even in some parts of Gladstone, there's interest in a North Oak line because you can create density along North Oak. But, you know, when you're just faced with a question of do you want to have a chance to vote on something, most of the time people will say yes.
Because, so you think it might be about that wording more than transit itself?
I think it is more about the intent of saying, hey, we would like to have a voice in this conversation. Now, if you read the actual ballot language, it says you are forbidden to plan before you even, you know,
right.
You have to go to a ballot just to plan. So that's kind of crazy because even if it doesn't matter if I'm in the Northland, Southland, anywhere, you know, someone's always going to ask, if I have to pay for something, what am I paying for? Well, in this case, I can't even tell you what you're going to pay for because that would mean I'd have to plan it. And if I do that, I'll be fined $1,000 a day. That doesn't make sense.
Well, back to the sort of Northland-specific transit questions, mm-hmm. I kind of wondered if the streetcar as it exists now and as the conversation has existed so far might have left Northlanders feeling that they're supporting something that doesn't benefit them or just like a feeling of being left out. Because most of the talk of expanding north of the river that I've heard anyway is about shuttling people back and forth between the airport and the city center. But people evidently, you know, don't live at the airport.
Right, right. Well, you know, when we were discussing the current streetcar line back in 2012, there was actually a discussion that was initiated by the Mid-America Regional Council, and it was between them, City of Kansas City, City of North Kansas City, and MoDOT. And they were trying to figure out how could you afford to actually make a streetcar work north of the river. The biggest problem you have is you have to cross the river. And that's at least a $50 million nugget that nobody knows how to pay for. And the existing tax base in the city of North Kansas City doesn't allow you to build what you would have to build, whether it was on Burlington or Swift. So I say all that to suggest that there was actually some planning that went along to consider how you could move a streetcar north of the river. But unfortunately, no one has the magic of figuring out how you pay for that. And then you get the wider issue, which was also evident in 2014 when we were trying to move eastward. That failed, as you'll recall, and that was south of the river. The only place it didn't fail was along the Main Street line, which is part of the reason why we're having that Main Street discussion now. But it always boils down at the end of the day, whether you're in the Northland or anywhere else, is do I see a value for what you're asking me to pay for? And when the Northland is as big as it is, and like I, you know, using the example, if you're on Flintlock and 152, or for that matter, if you're at Tiffany Springs Parkway and 169, if you don't see it, if you don't think you can access it easily, if you're not sure what it's connecting you to, those are all question marks that would suggest that you may not see a value, which again is kind of why we've been going down the road of the Transportation Development District route.
Do you think that the streetcar, as its sort of like originating kernel currently exists, has benefited or been an amenity for people in the Northland? In maybe, I mean, you hear about people driving in from Johnson County, parking at Union Station, riding the streetcar to the city market. Mm-hmm. Do you see that same kind of activity coming from the north?
Oh, absolutely. The same activity is happening there because now you have an easy link to multiple destinations in the downtown corridor. That is the reason why I think there is excitement moving south of Union Station, too. The reality is it is bringing people who are wanting an entertainment option. And so they are coming. And I think it shows itself even in the economics of it. You know, sales tax growth in that transportation development district around the streetcar has grown by over 50% in the first year of its operation. Sales taxes have grown throughout the rest of the city by only 16%. What it suggests is that it's not just Johnson County people who are coming utilizing the streetcar. It's everybody else around the city, Northlanders included, who are looking for an entertainment option, and the streetcar is creating a better option because now I can move along multiple destinations along a single line very easily. And I think that's the question ultimately for the Northland is, do you want that same sort of investment, that same sort of growth north of the river? That's a possibility. Unfortunately, it costs money to do that.
Well, Scott Wagner, Kansas City City Councilman for the 1st District at Large, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And now we're heading into the Southland for the last few minutes of the show anyway. We're talking about a new instrument almost 10 years in the making. It's finally ready to show all she's got. KCUR's Suzanne Hogan has the story.
Meet Elisa Bickers, the principal organist at Village Presbyterian Church in Prey Village, and the church's new organ, Opus 22.
One of the cool things about the organ is that it's got so many sounds at your disposal. There's some like flutes, some that sound like strings, some that sound like trumpets, or bassoons.
Bickers calls the organ Opus for short, and it's a she.
And then there's a sound that doesn't exist anywhere except an organ, which is called a principal. That's kind of the basic organ sound that people associate with, you know, hymn singing.
Bickers has been playing the organ since she was 12 years old. She plays a lot of different instruments, but has a particular love for the organ. One reason? Well, no two organs are the same. And it's an instrument that offers endless variety.
It can create such gentleness or such power. It's such a variety within one box, with one player.
And this box, Opus 22, is 24 feet tall. It weighs 17 tons, and it takes up the whole back wall of the church.
So I can take you inside?
Inside the organ?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Go for it.
I guess it never occurred to me that you could go inside of it in this way, but now I feel silly for not having realized that.
Some of them are really tight, but yeah, you have to build it somehow.
Imagine being inside a large walk-in closet that's completely filled with pipes. Some as tall as 16 feet to some as small as a few centimeters.
All of these pipes are played by the feet. And if you look down this way, any of the ones that are painted gray were kept from the old organ.
Yes, some of the old organ is part of the new Opus. Bickers played that organ too, but she said that one was on her last legs.
I called her Old Wheezy because it had a lot of wind leaks. And so you turned it on and it just went whoosh. It wasn't a nice name.
Almost 10 years ago, the congregation at Village Presbyterian Church created a pipe organ committee. They brought in consultants, considered the acoustics of the room, and eventually they hired organ builders Richard Fox and Company out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. They started building the organ 5 years ago.
I mean, it takes a long time to build for good reason. You know, all of these parts built by hand by really talented people, and it's got to be done just so.
They were able to use 50 of the pipes from Old Wheezy in the new design. And they've been assembling the organ in the church and voicing the 3,600 pipes inside for the past year.
The voicing process is taking those pipes and adjusting them at various points. You can adjust the toe to make it louder or softer. You make adjustments at the beard or the ears or the mouth. You make adjustments in the body. There's just parts to each pipe. And so once they get it here in the room, they put it in the organ and they make it sound just right.
A process, all in all, that's taken over 40,000 hours of labor and cost $2 million. The voicing was completed 2 weeks ago, just in time for her dedicatory recital.
I mean, you can't just throw them in there. It's got to be measured and the weight correct and the wind correct. It's a really fascinating meld of art and science to get it right.
Now that the installation and voicing is complete, Bickers says the really fun part can begin, sharing Opus with the community. Village Presbyterian Church has scheduled a series of public concerts throughout the year. They have organ lessons planned, and they'll, of course, continue to have their regular worship services. And in 1 year, after the wood and pipes have settled into their new Prairie Village home, the organ builders will come back for another voicing session. just to make sure Opus sounds the absolute best that she can.
Elisa Bickers is dedicating Opus 22 in a special recital this evening at Village Presbyterian Church. You can find out more information at kcur.org. And that's a wrap for today's show here on Central Standard. Tomorrow, parking. It's a problem. Or is it? As in convenient as it is to hunt for a parking place, a lot of people see that as a good sign for a dense, vibrant urban neighborhood. What do you think? Join the conversation tomorrow at 10. You can also listen back to anything you've heard on this show online at kcur.org/centralstandard. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Talk to us on Twitter anytime. We are at KCURCST. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan, with lots of help from intern Danielle Hogarty. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next here on KCUR, so stay tuned.
This is KCUR 89.3 and KCUR.org. On the next Fresh Air, a conversation with a senior researcher at the Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism. We'll discuss militia groups in America, what they stand for, and how they've responded to the Trump presidency. Fresh Air is tonight at 7. Support for KCUR comes from the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures, presenting Miniature Masterworks, a juried art show of fine-scale miniature work featuring 65 artists from around the world, with tours of their work in the museum gallery, all included with admission. September 15th through the 17th, learn more at toyandminiaturemuseum.org/masterworks. And support for KCUR comes from support from the Patty Cahill Endowment for Local News. It's almost 11 o'clock, 70 degrees in Midtown, Kansas City. This is KCUR, KCUR HD1, Kansas City Public Media. Good morning. KCUR's Up to Date is next.